Welcome to the Apartment Operators Podcast, where you can learn from experienced operators what it really means to be an apartment operator. No fluff, no sugarcoating, just the raw, unfiltered truth of the ups and downs of operating multifamily communities.
Welcome, everybody, to the Apartment Operators Podcast. I'm your host, Joseph Goslan, and today I have a very special guest. I have James Kandasamy. James, welcome to the show.
Happy to be here, Joseph. Nice to be on your show. Finally, I think we tried to make this show a few times and finally we're able to, finally doing it.
Yeah, I'm glad. We've been friends for a while, so it's really an honor to have you on the show. Let's, just like we do in every show, let's take the first minute or two to let you have the stage, introduce yourself, tell our audience a little bit about your background, how you got to multifamily, what did you do in the multifamily world and where you are today?
Sure. I started on the single family space. I'm basically used to be in a corporate world. I'm an electrical engineer, an MBA, and all the stuff there. And then after that, I did CIM as well. But CIM is something I did recently, not because of CIM, I'm in multifamily, but started doing single family flips in 2013. And I think 2015 is when I started buying my first apartment complex, 41 units. And we used to own like almost 3,000 something units. And then we sold half of it last year. And we also started doing a lot of land development. And now we have a ground up construction as well on 300 plus units that already moved it. I'm going to be pouring concrete right now. And we're also doing a quite number of land entitlement right now for multifamily and BTR, right? So yeah, that's very high level on my introduction. We have asset under management, doesn't really matter a lot for me, but I know a lot of people look at that and get hyped for it. We have almost, 500 million in assets under management. Yeah, that's the high-level introduction.
Awesome. That's wonderful. And then I know you, so I know how impressive your background is and how you've done great deals for your investors. I'm going to ask questions in this podcast that I know the answer for.
No problem.
I'm still going to ask them. So do you guys do third-party or do you self-manage?
So we started self-management right from day one. So we didn't do third party.
So that is unusual, right? So we talked to a lot of operators and a lot of them, when they get to a certain scale, they go to the third party management because they realize that's the best way to operate, right? The most control, you can operate surgically, you can make the decisions fast and be reactive enough to what needs to be reactive. How did you get to, I've never managed anything like this, I'm still going to go in and manage. How big was your first project?
First one was 45 units.
So how do you jump into say, I'm going to manage 45 units apartment complex?
Yeah, it's a good point, because not only 45 units apartment, which is the first apartment, it was also in San Antonio. We are from Austin. My wife and I are from Austin. So it's a battle between the husband and wife. And I was telling, let's do third-party property management. And my wife was telling, no, we're going to manage it ourselves. And when I look at the operation statement of the current property management of that 45 units, this is one of the largest, in fact, they probably are the largest property management company in San Antonio, which my understanding is third-party is supposed to be super efficient, very less inefficiency. They should be doing a good job. But when I look at the financial statement, I say, wow, this is so much of wastage on the financial statement. And when I visited the manager, 45 minutes, they had a part-time manager. They did not know much about it. So we realized that third-party management doesn't mean they are better than what you think you can get from you self-managing. You self-managing can be a lot of work. And I really was thinking maybe we should just do third party. But of course, my wife is the wiser one. She said we have to do it ourselves.
Yep.
And she convinced me to do ourselves. So I can't brag about me being so brainy about doing things on my own. But we made that decision because it was first deal. It was a value add. And we think that it's going to be a well-oiled machine or very efficient operation if we run it, because we can manage it ourselves in terms of the contractors, in terms of the rehab process, and in terms of any leasing activities.
So how bumpy was it at the beginning?
Right?
It's absolutely, it's a monumental task to take on when you don't have that experience and you don't have the contact and so on. Tell us a little bit about the first few months, the first year of setting up your own management company when you've never done something like that before.
Yeah, it was hard. But one thing we had before we started managing that 45 units was we had that single family rentals. We had 13 rentals. So we were very well versed with the leases. We were very well versed with the tenant screening. We were very well versed with how to remodel a house. But going into an apartment was completely different, right? So setting up was not that difficult because we already have the LLCs. We already know how to screen tenant. Hiring people, I used to be a manager in a large company, and all that is transferable skill, right? How to hire people. But also you're hiring somebody at that level, right? As a manager, it was a bit difficult. So the lucky part for us is the first manager we hired lives nearby the property, and she stayed for 2 years. Right? So a lot of times it's very hard to find people who stay in that position. So she stayed. So we were very lucky with that. And the difficult part was more on the remodeling, because now we set up a budget to remodel apartments, but how do you get the right contractors? Because it's hard to find contractors who you know is going to work, right? Because this, you know, is a, you know, it's a new city, new apartment, new part of town. So we tried a few methods, right? One of the methods that I can pass on to your audience here is we start looking for contractors in Craigslist, right? And we took 3 contractors from Craigslist because they are the cheaper one, or they are the one that doesn't have the license. Of course, people say everybody need to be licensed and bonded, but you know, it doesn't work that way all the time, right? Especially when you want to do at a very cost-efficient part, right? We took 3 contractors and we gave them 3 different units, and then we get them to do work, right? And after that, after 1 month, we fired the other 2 and gave a lot of work for that one guy who really, even that after 2-3 months, they also left, and we have to keep on hiring contractors. So contractors took us some time to really get the right contractors. That was really hard because you're losing money all the time whenever they leave the job halfway through. Apart from hiring that one manager and contractor, lease up and all that, it was not that difficult. Setting up the property management software, there's a lot of easy to use property management software. We used some for single family and we moved that to multifamily. And the software we use like Rasmund, which is very, it's like a Facebook, and as long as you understand leases and how occupancy works, leases expiring, how this, you know, then it becomes super easy.
Yeah, and you mentioned contractors. That's a challenge that everybody in the industry has, right? Yeah. It's even when you find a good one, they don't last, or they move on to something else, or they increase their prices to the point where they basically price themselves out of the job. I joke around, but it's based on truth. In contractors world, you can get good, you can get reliable, and I'm sorry, you can get reliable, you can get cheap, and you can get fast, but you can only pick 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, a lot of people like to get GCs, right? And we have learned this, no, don't do hire GC at that level, because from our single family experience, because we used to do a lot of single family rental flips, and we have tried with the GC and without GCs, and we realized that with the GCs become the worst. Now the GC is holding your money and they're not really good project managers. They're not good money managers and they mess up the complete, the whole deal. So we said, no more GCs, it's all our subs. We are going to be the GC, yeah. Even though it's harder, but it's a lot more cheaper and more efficient. So we did that when we bought our first apartment complex. We said, no GCs, we're going to just look for subs. And subs also is very, there's a few things, right? One is there's big subs and there's some interrelated subs, right? So the big subs are the roof, the driveways, right? The exterior painting. So they are the big stuff, right? You can get like one guy and they are really not related to any other subs. So you pay them the money and they do the job and they can go home. You don't fight with another subs. But there's another sub or contractor, what I call as interrelated subs, which are the painters, the flooring guys, and the kitchen installers, the guys who work inside. They have to talk among each other.
Yeah.
So maybe on that part, you can get one guy to do everything, maybe like a sub GC kind of thing. But that's the more difficult part because they need to talk among each other. They have to coordinate very well. So we did that, right? We hire one guy who can do everything inside and subs for outside big work. So that can really work in apartment business at a very efficient cost.
And one of the things that people that are looking into setting up their own property management company, one of the things that kind of scares them the most is all the bookkeeping, the accounting, the bank reconciliation, because like I said, people come from different worlds, still have experience with management, hiring, dealing with contractors, but not a lot of them have that experience dealing with the back end side of things. And I know you guys did something unique in that space. So how did you handle that?
Yeah, in the beginning, it's a really good point. Accounting is really a mess. We tried multiple routes. So the first route we tried, we hired a CPA, right? People who take by hourly, and then we send them all the bills and we get them to enter. And that was so expensive because every time a CPA comes, it takes 3 months for them to really set up the whole system. And we are like fast runners. We are like aggressive. We don't know what's happening. And at the end of the day, we fire 3 CPAs and it's already 9 months by the time we get all our books. And every time a new CPA comes in, they take like another 2 or 3 months to set up, right? So we are like so tired, right? But at the end of the day, we tried hiring a third party company just to do accounting. That also really didn't work out very well. We hired third party and we didn't work out very well. And finally, once we have certain number of units, like 1,000 units, we hired our own accounting person. So now we have our 2 accounting person doing all our properties. But we went through a multiple cycle of different people to do that books. But you're right, books is really hard to get it right in the beginning.
Yeah, and a lot of it is because there is a disconnect between the people in the field and the people in the back office. So the person in the back office can see an expense written some one way, and then another person entered an invoice and it turned another way. And somehow that person in the back office is supposed to know that it's the same kind of expense and they're both supposed to go to the same GL account. Then sometimes picking the GL account is definitely an interesting roulette. Correct. We've had property management companies that we work with, like third party, and you would randomly find the same expense every month, different accounts, randomly. I swear to God, there's no reason or rhymes around that. That's been definitely a challenge, even with professional third party management. Correct. Even they have the same problem.
Yeah, even for us, even we have our own accounting team. We have to train them. Because the thing is, you have property managers entering the invoice, right? And then accounting team, they enter some invoices, but not all of it, right? So accounting team is much easier to control, but the property managers, it's hard to control, right? Because they will enter something and sometimes they don't understand between capital and expense, one-time expense. They do not know, right? So you have to do a lot of training. And we have to keep on auditing our books, right? As I said, in the beginning, you can do that. But as you grow bigger, it just become hard. Even now, we still find some miscategorization, even in our own deals. So that's something that is a challenge. It's not easily solvable.
Yeah. One of the things that we leveraged was VAs. Instead of having to train, because we in the offices, we have a lot of attrition, right? You're leasing agents come and go, managers come and go, assistant managers come and go. So we found that it would be easier and more cost effective to tell them, you know what, you get an invoice, just scan it and send it to this email address. Don't worry about putting it in the system. And then we train the VA to be on the receiving end of that email address. And we train the VA of how to categorize invoices. So we trained one person, that person's been with us for a while now, and we don't have to worry about a lot of these things. Now, is she perfect? No, nobody is. And sometimes it goes into the wrong place. But for the most part, it did save us a lot of confusions. It also takes a lot of the admin load off the office people, which in turn let them do more leasing, more management, more interactions with the residents. And that helps the whole operations of the property. So we took that piece out of their hands and told them just scan it and send it to this address.
Yeah, you'll be surprised on how much VA, there's not much of attrition. They don't leave easily and they're more consistent.
Yeah. Again, we've found multiple interesting ways to leverage VAs in our management world. Are you guys using any VAs?
Yeah, we do. We do VAs mainly for KPIs for property management. So the VAs usually they sit in Philippines or what. So they will basically look at our property management software. So they track our delinquency, our economic occupancy, our make ready, our idling units and all. So we track a lot of KPI and they will visualize it for us and send it back to us. So that's a really good value add in terms of the VAs.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. We had our VAs send a daily report basically with those KPIs. We did the same thing. We've identified those things that we want to track and they would send daily emails with the manager, the supervisor, and us with how those are moving, right? So not only we can get to see a picture of you have X unit vacant right now, we were also able to see the changes, right? So we would tell them, okay, show us the difference from today to yesterday or from this month to last month and so on. So it really helps you kind of get a quick picture in your email every day so you can raise the flag and say, wait, that's not moving in the right direction. Let's go dig into
it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all that KPIs is key, right? Because as asset manager operators, you have to monitor this. And sometimes the property managers doesn't have time. They have to work on the on-site staffing, at the same time on-site leasing. They have a lot of other things. Sometimes they're not able to visualize all this. And we visualizing it and giving them feedback will be very beneficial in terms of improving operation.
Awesome. Let's switch over and talk about value add, right? I know you've done a lot of turnarounds, value add in your deals. Everybody knows about RUBS and everybody knows about coming in and raising rents. So other than these two, let's talk about a few other ways that you guys come into a property and increase income. And then we'll turn the conversation into how do you decrease expenses, right? Because both sides of the equation helps the NOI in the same way. Every dollar I increase in income or dollar I decrease in expenses is an equal dollar to the NOI. Let's start with the income and then we'll switch to the expense in a second.
Sure. So I usually, when I underwrite my deals, I use something called a bump methodology, bump the rent kind of thing, right? So rent is the ultimate thing. If a sponsor or operator start talking about adding washer dryer, adding parking and all, that means that's the bottom of the barrel deal. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So bump is basically BU stands for building. That means what is the rent upside without you doing any remodeling, right? What is the base rent, right? That means out of 12-month leases, there could be some people who has not caught up to the market rent, right? Or they will never caught up, or they may take a few years to go, right? So when you buy, we are assuming that we can get everybody else to the market rent or to the rent that is possible in that property. So that is BU, right? The MP is basically market rent, which is basically based on a comp, right? If your comp is able to get higher rent just because they did remodeling. So that's another upside that we have. So we have two levels of upside. So when we buy our deals, we don't even touch the BUMP. We just make sure that we just do good management. And you'll be surprised on just by good management, you probably can just jump up $50 without doing anything, right? So that's our first strategy. The second strategy is now, okay, let's get everybody to caught up to the average rent of the property, right? So that's the BU part of it. And then after that, we start looking at, this will be like every 3 months, we start having some kind of tiered program because we do not want to over rehab any property too, because any rehab money that you have is very valuable to be sitting in the bank rather than putting in, you're not getting that NOI that you want to project. If you get your NOI without doing this, you should do that, right? It's completely different from a lot of people who they said, first day, I want to go and start remodeling. Let's start remodeling this, let's start remodeling that, right? We try not to do that. We want to take, first is management upside. Second is the just get everybody caught up to the rent. And third is let's start remodeling some units, see how much bump you're getting. You do not want to be remodeling five to maybe now it's $10,000 unit and you get a $50 rent, right? It's a waste, right? Because you may not need to do that. And your pro forma, you probably only have 100 units, $100 per unit increase. So the $100 rent increase, you can just get by good management and just getting everybody caught up. And above that can be your future upside, right? That's your icing on the cake, right? So we really want to make sure we do the first two levels first before we do the remodel. Otherwise, I just keep the money in the bank account. But on the income side, yeah, of course, remodeling with the nicer units will be much better. Of course, the kitchen is always the highest priority. Kitchen mm-hmm. and bathrooms, as long as you do that well.
Selling point, yeah.
So important. But also, how clean is your rehab is also important. Every contractor will do some work, but sometimes their work is not very clean. So when a prospect walk in, they can see the door is a bit crooked, the line is not straight. So all that matters. So you are really, as an operator, you really have to train your operator to do a good job.
Yeah, because if they see a half-assed renovation, they'll say they manage everything half-assed.
Yeah, I know. It's just hard to lease up. Hard to really do a good lease up when the job is not very well. So remodeling, of course, we'll do that to increase rent. That'll be the primary income. On top of other things, we have a lot of miscellaneous income, right? But before I go to miscellaneous income, we have RUBS. RUBS, you want to make sure you have the highest RUBS percentage that you can get, right? Yeah. This is very tricky because UC has different methodology of allocation of RUBS. Right, they have a square footage by square footage plus occupant. Sometimes it's just by occupant, sometimes it's by square footage, and there's
bedrooms,
which is called a ratio utility billing, which is there as a ratio. 1% means it's 1.6, and then 2% is 1.6. There's a certain ratio. So selecting which PUC can also maximize your RUBS. So we always talk about PUC number two, which is basically ratio utility billing. And that's usually the highest chances of you getting the highest collection, recollection back of your RUPS. So that's one tip. On the miscellaneous income, we implement a lot of other things other than pad rent, pad fees. We do a renter's liability insurance, which we charge renters for common area insurance. So we charge them like $11, but they pay us. When we charge them $11, we pay $6, we get $5 upside. Mm-hmm. We have assigned parking, which is one of the cheapest way to, without doing any CapEx, right? Just assign the parking to certain units, $10 or $12 per unit. What else we do special? Other than carports, all that's pretty common, right? So pest control, we can recover the pest. That's all not governed by PUC. So you can have a reasonable one, right? Water and sewer is governed by PUC. Mm-hmm. You have a certain methodology you have to use, but pest control trash, you really don't have to follow. So you can charge $10 or $11 on a trash, not knowing how much trash is being collected, how much is the expense. So you can go slightly above 100% on that collection. Not to be unreasonable, but that are some things that you can go a bit more than what you're charging.
So do you guys still do RUBS? Because we've seen a trend in the industry of people moving back away from RUBS because of the complexity and switching into just fixed fee utilities. No, we started doing that as well.
Yeah, I'm not fixed fee utilities. I mean, because it's, the problem is with high inflation, people want to budget the expense, right? They want to have a different number coming in every month. So we have one property which we converted from hotel to multifamily, which we did all bills paid, and people just love it. People love all bills paid. Mm-hmm. Apart from the units are really nice, but this is one of the other things. So we love all bills paid because I pay X and I'm done.
Yeah.
And they are happy with that.
And fixed fee utilities gives them an opportunity to get there. Right. So that's what we did. We took the average of what we've seen people pay on our property, and then we built a matrix. So one bedroom, two bedroom, and how many people you're going to have? One person, two people, or more than two people? And then we build this little matrix, and each box in the matrix has a dollar amount. So when we lease, we tell them, instead of allocating, this is the fixed fee for the utilities. Here's your base rent. Here's your utility fee. How many people are going to live in the apartment? That's what's going to be your fee. And it allows us to basically get to a few things. One, they get the stability, they get the predictability of their bills, which they love, and help us leasing. It helps us eliminate the need for a third-party company because we outsourced all the utility billing side of things because you guys have the capacity to deal with all the regulation and the municipality headache. We just didn't want to deal with it. We saw that as a liability, so we didn't want to deal with it. So we actually had to pay a third-party company to do all that work for us. And then at the end of the day, you control the utility fee. So now it's no longer falling into the RUBS and the regulations and the rules. You can charge whatever you feel is right and whatever the market will bear, and that's up to you. So we thought that trend seemed reasonable to us, and we implemented it. And I think next month will be our last month with the third-party utility company because we converted everybody over.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really good methodology to do that, because if putting myself in a resident shoe, I would love a fixed pay, just pay this and be done, right?
Yep.
And I just avoid all kind of questions. Why is this month is high? Did you all have a leak? Did you charge to me? And all kind of things.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that will be a very attractive amenity, I would say, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And we are seeing that in one apartment that we have, that which is all bills paid, and people just love it.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Where are you guys in your property management practice today? How does that look like? How many people? You said you still run a six lot assets. Of units.
Yeah. Yes. So we have 50 people working for us, six assets, and we have a few corporate people, maybe 8 to 9 corporate people. But the corporate is also, we're also doing ground up development and all that, right? Plus mm-hmm. accounting. So I would say maybe 5 in corporate and then around 40 to 50 people on the property management side.
And you have regional supervisors?
Yes, I have regional manager reporting to us.
And who's working with the regional?
We, Shanti and I, my wife and I, are working with the regional.
So
we don't have a VP of operation in between.
Maybe it's time to get one.
We tried. We had a few. We had 2 or 3 VP of operations, but maybe in the future we'll hire one. But we tried.
They don't live up to the standard.
Not to our standard. We are operators, right? If you see, when we started, we know the every single detail of the business.
Yeah.
So that's too dangerous for any VP of operations. So we will ask a lot of questions on why, because we know how the whole thing works. Like if a property doesn't lease up on certain month, we can tell you why. Okay, did you go look at the leads CRM, right? How many people did you apply? So we'll ask a lot of questions. And it's just a very high expectation from us to that VP of operations. So whoever comes in need to be really good or better than us, which we really want them to be, because we don't want to be doing this ourselves, because we are also owners of the asset. It's just too much of our time. But we have to find the right people.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges that everybody's having with third-party management. It's when you get to the supervisors and the regionals and so on, all the way up to the VPs, 95 times out of 100, it's people that started from the field. They started as a leasing agent, then a manager, then a supervisor, then regional, and then they become a VP. But they don't have necessarily the skill set or the mindset of an owner, and especially not an owner operator. I've had the exact same experience as being able to be in the details and knowing everything, and then asking my VP questions and they don't have the answers. And that's because when they grow in the industry, they, as a regional in a large property management company, usually manage thousands of units. So their ability and capacity to be in the details is not there. So that's how they grow. So the VP doesn't have the details because in a, again, third-party property management, he has to be on top of 5, 6, 7,000 units plus, and there's no way you'll be in the details in a corporate world when they dump so many units on you. But I like the way you said it, and they need to be as good or better than us. And honestly, it's going to be very challenging to fill those shoes.
Yes.
Correct. And again, I'm pretty sure you're not paying for your grade of person in the VP position. And that's what a lot of us forget, is we will go and we'll buy a $4 or $5 million property, a $10 million property, then we hand over the keys to a $50,000-$60,000 a year person.
Yeah, that's
then,
true.
And then we expect them to operate at a standard that is much higher than the pay grade.
Yeah. So that's true. I mean, it's just hard to find, as an entrepreneur, the A to Z of the business, right? And you are really, your heart and soul is in it, right? Because you want to make sure you're really successful. Whereas as an employee, they may not need to have that heart and soul, right? They're just another person. Same thing in any job or so, right? You'll find employees who really put their heart and soul into the job, and the employees who are just going to do minimal stuff just to get by, right? Mm-hmm. They'll work a bit, but it's not their baby.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make them your baby even when they're an employee. So yeah, I do not know what's the answer to that. But
the answer is to keep doing what you're doing. And that's
but the problem is we can't grow.
But that's how you bring value to your investors, and that's how you grow.
Yeah, I've seen like a lot of my colleagues who are in the syndication, they start buying thousands. They keep on buying every month. I say, how are you guys doing it? They're giving it to third party, right? You lose a lot of efficiency. You lose at least 10 to 15% efficiency in NOI too when you do that, because third party is third party. And you can do all that in a hot market in the past 10 years, right? Past 10 years, 2010 to 2020, 2022, beginning of 2022, things were hot, right? You can just keep on buying because the market itself is carrying you up. You don't have to really care about what the property management company is doing. The asset manager can go for vacation. Nothing happens. Everybody makes money. But when the market turns, like during COVID, market turned. It was a really difficult time. And I don't know, first batch of syndicators disappeared during that time. And this time, the second batch of syndicators are going to disappear as well. These are the people who are not good operators. They bought it because the market is hot. They're surviving it. But then it's very hard to survive if you're not a good operator during these times.
Yeah, and I had that conversation before we started recording. And you're absolutely right. I think in the next few years, what we'll see is that only the top level operators are going to survive. The guys that are your level of experience, your level of knowledge, your level of attention to details. Because if you're a mediocre operator, anywhere in the last 10 years, the market could have compensated for your inefficiencies. Right? It's not necessarily that you're a bad operator or you make mistakes. It's just that you're not as efficient as you can be. But the market rent growth covers that inefficiency. I personally believe that this party is over, right? And now in the next few years, everything is going to be tighter. anywhere between the fact that we've already seen rent growth flatten, some certain pockets in the market have actually gone down. Some of them are still going up, but they're not going up anywhere near the rate that were going up in the last 10 years. And at the same time, we're seeing a huge spike in expenses. And that's inflation between labor costs, because Chick-fil-A pays $18 an hour, and it's a lot easier work than being a maintenance guy or make equity. And Walmart, I just came back from an industrial summit, and the Walmart distribution guys are paying $26 an hour plus benefits to work in the distribution center. Labor costs are just skyrocketing. Material costs are increasing a lot. And we'll talk about, you said you have new construction. I'm sure you've seen the cost of cement exorbitantly growing day over day. So when you're in a market where rent cannot outpace the cost of expenses growing, then you better be very tight on every dollar that gets spent, and you better be a top-notch operator. And unfortunately, not everybody can be top-notch operators. That's just not it. And that's where we're going to see some challenges coming into some of those operators in the next 2 years, is the markets are just going to, the properties are just not going to perform. That's and true. You compound that with debt that is coming due and bridge loans that are coming due, and we're going to see some interesting buying opportunities, let's call it that way.
Yes.
Yeah. We talked about increasing income. Anything interesting you guys do to reduce expenses when you take
expenses,
over?
Expenses, I think apart from the operating expense, make readies, you want to try to use your own internal people to do make readies. When you buy in volume, of course, your material cost comes down. And we usually not only volume, we also have much better account position, like with Lowe's or Home Depot, right? We have special accounts with them, which they give you really good prices. So you want to try to get that as well. In terms of water and sewer, you just want to make sure you monitor your water and sewer so it doesn't go out of whack. And tax, of course, hire a property tax consultant to protest your tax every year. Insurance, you want to shop it as much as possible.
Insurance is really getting hammered everywhere. We got hit 30% this year increase.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I talked to some really large operators, and some of their properties got hit 50% increase. Yes. And when I got hit with 30%, I shopped it and I talked to a few brokers, and they all told me, we can't do any better. Take the 30% and be happy. So that wasn't fun.
Correct. Mine went up 10% increase this year, which was much better than 30%. But
yeah.
But mine was already high from last year itself, so probably that's why. But yeah, insurance went up, property tax. Hopefully this year is not going up, but because of all the economic situation. Apart from that, what else? Payroll. We don't double payroll like what third party property management company will do. They hide a lot of charges into the payroll. Yeah. That's why their payroll is like $1,400 or $1,300 per door or $1,200, and our payroll is like almost $1,000 per door. And because we pay everyone much better rate than everyone, but there's no additional burden that was sneaked in by what third party does. So third party has no way to make 3% third party property management. It is just too much of a work to get just 3%. So what the third party management company do is they sneak in all kind of fees into all the other expense codes.
Yeah, I've had that conversation with many operators. The way we compensate third-party companies makes no sense. Yep. Unfortunately, I don't have a better answer. And it's like, I couldn't come up with a better model to compensate third-party. And our audience that watches our videos know that I keep talking about this with a lot of people. It's just, it makes no sense. And you're right, they got to find ways to increase their income somewhere else, or cut in the amount of work they do for you for the same price, which at the end of the day might not mean a lot of difference for them, but could mean a lot of difference for us. For example, let's say they don't collect, and they can collect fees wise, and it's $25,000 a year. For us at a 6 cap, it's almost $500,000. For them, it's $83 a month. So is it worth doing a lot more work? Because $83 a month for a property management company, it's 2 hours of labor.
Yeah. I was thinking of doing third-party property management. And I was thinking, I can never on my right conscience just charge 3%, just to be fair to the operator. I said, why not my compensation based on NOI? The more NOI you increase, the more
we had that conversation. So all I have to do as a third party manager is deferred maintenance, and I get your NOI goals and I get paid.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. There's ways to manipulate almost every number we have. So that's why I couldn't come up with a different model. The only way I could figure is JV. I'm an investor and I JV with you. I know you are also the in-house management and you're also a partner. So you have a vested interest. This is the only way investor, the owner and the property manager would have the same interest aligned. Otherwise, I don't see a better model. I just couldn't find one.
Yeah, I could not figure out, because expenses can change without their control, our control, and it's just hard to compensate based on that. So income is the best. And
yeah, we talked about insurance, right? 30% increase goes straight into your NOI, and the property management company has no control over that. So now they're going to get hit on their compensation because insurance went up all over the country.
Yeah. Now, I was thinking more on the controllable operational income expense. So
now you're getting into gray area and then.
Yeah, but still there's gray area, right? Minus the property tax, insurance, and the management fee, right? Everything else is controllable within them. So is there a way to do that or not? But end of the day, I decided not to do third party because I know it's how much a thankless job is that for too little compensation.
The headache, right? So, the headaches to returns is not there.
Yeah, exactly. Some of your audience are going to ask us, right? Why are you doing it? The reason why we do is because we do a lot of difficult projects. We do a lot of deep value adds, a lot of turnaround. And if I give it to third-party property management, they can never do that. You need to have your heart and soul in it. You have to be at the property very frequently and all that. They're not going to do it. It's not their money. It's not. We don't make many. In fact, we lose money on property management, but I think that's the reason why we make a lot more money on our assets compared to a lot of other operators.
Yeah,
who uses
exactly.
Third-party property management.
And this is the same statement we hear from every operator that grew to a scale that allowed them to create their own management company. It's not a profit center. It's more of a brain damage center. But but the control allows us to make more money on the ownership side and for our investors than not using a third party. We just keep hearing the same statement over and over. I think from the 30-something episodes that we've already had, we maybe had two or three that said they like to stay with third-party manager.
Yep.
So
I mean, time versus effort versus money.
Yeah, and I just want to circle back for a second about a couple of things that you said on saving money. One was watch your water usage, and that is super critical. One trick that we used to do was to watch the meters and track the meters once a week. So always on a Tuesday at around 10 a.m. or so, you pick a day and you pick a time of the day, and you have, if you have digital meters that you can look online, then that's great. Your VA can pull the data and look at the numbers. Or if not, then we had our maintenance guys on the older properties go out and read the meter and send us the numbers. This way, you can pick up a slab leak or a big shift in consumption within days. Because if you're waiting for the water bill to come in for you to know there's a big consumption, you're about a month and a half too late. Now you've been bleeding for 2 months. So that was one of the little tricks that we used on watching the water consumption. Because especially on the C-class properties, and you know that, right? I think 1980s and older, you would find slab leaks and sewer problems and all these kind of things that you could be literally flushing water down the toilet and nobody would even notice it.
Correct. Yeah, it's hard on the older assets. And I mean, coming back to third party, since we are used to older assets, you know, it makes sense for us to self-manage with this amount. But things may be different on a newer assets, right? A class A. Maybe it's, if you buy it, maybe third party would make a lot more better because they have less issues. But I've not tried it. But
so the question is it less issues or the numbers are big enough to hide inefficiencies?
Could be, yeah, exactly. But at the end of the day, we can't be doing this forever. We can't be self-managing forever. At some point, we have to safeguard our time because time is the most important thing in our life, right? At some point, you'll make money more than you can forgive the inefficiencies of the third party, right? So at that point of time, you probably will be okay because your time becomes more important.
So let me ask you a different question and look at it from a different angle. That VP of operations that you couldn't hire, have you considered upgrading that pay grade to, let's say, $150,000 a year pay grade or $200,000 a year pay grade to find that person that can do things better than you.
Oh, we tried all that. We started increasing by 50,000. We thought we are paying too low. But I've realized no matter what you pay, it's all about the how much ownership they have in the asset, how much passionate they are about the deal. Do they really care about their baby? And if you don't find that, you can find that even with the lower paid people. So I don't think so pay was the issue because we were like really paying very high.
Interesting.
To get the best VP of operations. And now that's the fact.
The reason I'm asking is you're going to go third party, you're going to pay that money anyways, right?
Yes,
correct. You're going to give away hundreds of thousands of dollars across your portfolio. Can you take that amount of money to generate that person that you were looking for?
Yeah, we have tried it, but pay was not the issue.
Okay, interesting.
As I said, at the end of the day, anybody who's doing this kind of difficult, not say difficult, class B and C, I'm not sure about class A because I've not really done class A. So anybody doing B and C they have to be in the deal. They have to be part of the problem. They have to be passionate. They have to think of it as their baby. And that makes a difference.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah. And we have some employees, I mean, who are like regional managers, senior managers, who are like they really care about our properties. And we don't mind paying them more because if something happened, they will stay 24/7 on the property.
Yeah.
And they will put their heart in. So they are that kind of people is highly valuable than these highly paid, VPs, because it's just different. Right? So I don't know, maybe one day we have to think about just promoting internally to people because passion and ownership is more important than knowledge.
Yeah. You can teach talent and you can teach work ethics, but you can teach every skill.
Every skill, exactly. So that's where my head is right now. Maybe we should just promote internally and teach them what they learn from a VP of operations or what. Because people with VP of operations, they're like 20, 30 years in the business. They come with their big baggage behind them. I know this, how to do it. And when we tell them differently, they say, what are you talking about? Oh, this is how we do it. Or it's not, right? We can do things better.
Yeah, maybe
so it all depends on your owner, whether they're dangerously knowledgeable in the apartment business. If they do not know anything, any VP of operation can go to somewhere and can around owners. But when the owners know a lot more than you, that's where it's very hard to
work. So let's switch a little bit to where you are today. You mentioned you're doing new construction.
Yeah.
So what led you to, let's stop the BNC class value add and go to, I'm going to build a brand new construction in Austin, which is probably very expensive and very painful to go through the red tape of Austin.
Yeah, no, this is in San Antonio, so it's slightly better than Austin. So
not by much.
Still, we have to go through a lot of red tapes. Yes, correct. So we have a lot of investors behind us, and they always keep on pushing us to do deals. And because our criteria to do deals is high, we really want to do deals that we really like. There's a lot of upside in it and all that. Just was so hard for me to find deals. And compared to some other operators, some other owners who are like keep on buying deals, they don't mind buying any deals without upside or very little upside. It's all about how aggressive or how conservative you are. So it doesn't mean you own 10,000 units, you are very good, right?
Yes.
So I could not find a lot of deals. At the same time, one of my investors has this land and he keeps on telling me, if I want to sell this land, I only sell to you. I say, why? Oh, because I trust you. I don't trust anyone else. And that was a really good land. It's an infill location in San Antonio. And he has been telling me for past 5 years. And I tried to bring in some developers to him and people don't want to do it. And finally, I said, okay, I'm going to do it, but it's going to take 2 years. And I said, it's a good skill for me to learn because I realized that first, I cannot find deals. Even though I find deals, there's a lot of pressure to close on deals. Whereas in ground-up construction, you can plan your way. You can plan your land entitlement. You can plan when are you going to build it. So it's a lot more longer lead time. So if I want to raise money, I have a lot more time. So I realized ground-up construction is more planning work, whereas BNC is more, it's very immediate. You have hard money, you have to close, you have to value add. You have a lot of investors asking when you're going to turn and all that. So that's why I realized that maybe I should try ground-up construction. And that investor had that very good, very nice land. And we went and did it. We did the zoning for 2 years, zoning and entitlement work, all the drawing, all with my own money for 2 years. And after that, we started building. That was the reason I want to do something else as well. And also I realized that real estate has 7 spectrum in it, right? Starting with the land banking, after that land subdividing, after that got land entitlement, after that got land ground up construction, after that got value add, and after that got repositioning where you break down the entire building and build a new one. Right. There's 7 spectrum on it. And a lot of times, a lot of gurus only teach the value-add side, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what they were taught, right?
Yes.
But every time I, you know, same thing, every time I drive around, I see somebody is doing that development. Somebody's that doing that ground. Oh, somebody is doing this land banking. So somebody is making money in all the seven spectrum. I always wonder, what is the other spectrum?
Yeah.
And I realized, like, there's other spectrum which you can make a lot more money, even though it's higher risk.
Yeah. But I was about to say, new development is the ultimate game in real estate. Mm-hmm. It's the highest risk, highest reward game. And usually nobody starts at new construction. They get to new construction. The reason it's the highest reward with the highest risk is on the risk side, the length of time it takes to get there is a risk factor. Anybody that bought a piece of land in, let's say, July of 2022, right before the world exploded, had a certain underwriting, and now only 6 months later, we live in a different world.
Really changed, yeah.
So new construction, especially that size, we're looking at 18 to 24 months before you can get people in the door. What's your time frame?
Mine is 26 months because it's 324 units.
Yeah. So that's a lot of time, and the market and the environment can change a lot in that time frame. So that's why it's the highest risk. But it is the highest reward, because at the end of the day, when you're done, you have an A-class property at a cost of a B-class, because you don't have to pay the premium for the developer. You don't have to pay the premium for the person that laid their money and took the high risk.
Right.
So it is the ultimate game of high risk, high reward in the real estate spectrum, like you called it, right?
Correct. Yeah, but that's one true. But there's also, like, even beyond that, buying a raw land, and how do you get it to zone, right? How do you get it entitled? That's also a big play. There's a lot of people playing in that space, but it's not very well taught. There's no gurus teaching that.
We have our friend Jack Bosch.
Jack Bosch is doing a lot of land flipping. He buys it. He does flips. Right? He doesn't develop. He's not a developer. But
correct.
He's playing one of the spectrum. He's playing the...
It's the one step before the development.
Yeah, the not in the land banking, but he buys it and quickly flip it. So he's our friend. So just in case the audience want to know.
He was a guest on the show too.
Okay, yeah. But if you buy the land, and in fact, I asked this Jack, so why not you develop it? He said, no, I'm not developing it. It's not his business model. He says too much risk. It's
a different skill set.
Yeah, it's a skill set. And sometimes you make more money on the fly, on the volume, rather than developing it. Even though development makes... end of the day, makes a lot more money on one transaction compared to land flipping. You do a lot of transactions to probably generate the same amount of money or less money, or maybe more money. I don't know. But getting a raw land at a good price and entitling it, it's a big value add on the whole ground up construction. A lot of developers will come after the land is entitled. But if you go beyond that, if you go beyond to the land, raw land, and you mitigate some risk, and if you have enough money to mitigate all that risk, and you hold it as yourself without bringing investors, that's another value add that you're doing.
Yeah, so, anything in commercial, anything that changes the usage to a better usage is going to make you a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
You can take a small industrial and somehow convert it to retail. It's change of usage to a better, more expensive. You make a lot of money. If I don't mistake, you did a hotel conversion to apartments, right?
We make,
and that's what it is. You convert it from one usage, which was destroyed with COVID, right? And you turned it into an apartment, which is still in high demand. So now you took one asset usage, changed the usage. Now it's worth a lot more than it was as a hotel.
Yeah, same thing with the office to a multifamily conversion that some people are doing right now, right? Yeah, yeah. The profit on that one hotel to multifamily conversion is equivalent to almost 2,000 apartment units.
Wow. That's mind-blowing, absolutely.
It's mind-blowing. We made like 30x in 12 months with that money, with that hotel. So that's like crazy deal. But you need that daringness to do that, right?
Yes, and it's not just daring. It's be willing to step into a world where you don't know what you don't know. You mentioned converting office buildings into apartment complexes. We have a joint friend, Kenny Wolf, that is doing just that, right? A couple of projects in, I believe, Kansas City right now. Mm-hmm. And then I had a conversation with him before he even started doing that, while he was researching the thing, and I was looking at a similar project. And he goes, well, we were looking at a 10-story building. If you need sheetrock on the 8th floor, you need to coordinate with the police to stop traffic at 2 a.m., bring a crane, pop up a window so you can put the sheetrock with the crane into the 8th floor, because the elevator is not big enough to get all the sheetrock you need in there. So it's okay, things you don't know that you don't know. That's where the daring part comes in. It's kind of like you take a risk going into a world where you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, so people who are daring to do that, it'll make the most money, because if you're doing as what Albert Einstein say, right? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different things. If you look at everybody's just buying the normal apartments and doing small value add and trying to make money, right? That's what, that's the safer way. But when you take more risk, and if you're able to maneuver through that risk, it's not easy. As I said, you have to be able to maneuver these unknown uncertainties and unknowns, and try to come out as successful at the end.
Yeah.
But the hotel conversion, the way we manage our risk was like, we took seller financing. We asked the seller to not pay any mortgage for 8 months. So we did multiple things. And then we'd work with the city even before closing to get the zoning. So someone who can able to manage all this risk can come out with a very good compensation end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to be conscious of your time. We're going a little bit long here today. If you could go back in time and talk to 20-year-old James, what would you tell him? What would be your advice to young James?
Young James, I would say get out of your network, right? That would be my advice. A lot of times, like when I started work, right, my first year of working on a W2 job, someone gave me a Robert Kiyosaki book. Right, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I took that book, I read it for 3-4 pages, and I threw it away. I said, this book is not for me, right? Because I'm not in that circle. I'm not in the business circle. I'm not in real estate. And it just doesn't make sense to me. Just because all my friends, all my network is all W2 employees. We all think alike, right? We go to the coffee place where we mingle. We talk about the same thing, right? But once you out from your network to another industry, say you go to a meetup or you go to networking, let me go and try this business conference. I'm going to try this business. Then you get to know about something else that you do not know that's commonly in your space, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't do that early enough, right? Until later on when I started. There was a reason why I need to get out of this W2 job, right? That's where I started looking at other options, and that's where I started finding. So I wouldn't change anything from my experience. All the while, I think we have been very successful, and I'm not going to change anything to be more successful than what we are right now, even though we can go from now onwards. But I think what I would say for the younger ones or whoever listening to this podcast is, go out of your network. Don't go to the same conference over and over again. I go to the multifamily conference, I see the same guys, right? And I go to another multifamily conference, the same guys. No. Go to a different conference. Go to a Chamber of Commerce conference. Go to a doctor's conference, because you'll be the only real estate guy there. People come to you.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. Yes.
Yeah. Why you want to go to everyone? Everybody's a real estate guy. And all the passive ones, all this multifamily conference, they already invested their money, because they already know who to invest with, right?
Yeah.
And if they're coming for the conference, that means they're not really passive. They're more active passive investors.
Yes.
They're not the best passive investors. The passive investors who are the best are the one that busy doing other things.
Yep.
And they only know you. So they're going to give you all your money to one person because they only know you. Whereas if you go to active and passive, they're going to take all the money and give to all the other syndicators.
Yep.
So think differently. Think differently where you can go to get new information.
Yeah. No, that's a really good advice. And it's funny how you mentioned the conferences. That's the same reason why I didn't go to the NMHS.
I didn't go to
Because you go to, it's the National Housing Multifamily Commission Council. So you go there, and everybody there is property managers and brokers. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm a property manager and I'm a broker. What am I going to do that? Talk to
the vendors.
People that do the same thing.
They're the vendors for principals, right?
So yeah, that was a great advice.
Yeah, correct. And right now, in April, I'm going to go to a hotel owners conference.
Okay.
Yeah, because I know a lot of hotel owners are accredited investors too.
Yeah, and they're also hurting right now. So you might find another conversion opportunity.
That's the thing that we're trying to do, right? We're going to go and advertise any hotel to multifamily conversion we are willing to buy. So just do something different. I didn't go for a lot of conferences in the past 6 months. And I've been one recently, and then I see the same people. But at least I meet my friends, I talk to them. But I have no hope of finding passive investors there. I have no hope of finding deals there. It's more of catching up with friends and get to know what they're doing and all that. It's maybe if you can find partners, you probably can go for that kind of conference, but
it's a different kind of networking. Absolutely.
Yeah, correct.
Awesome. James, I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been always a pleasure talking to you. Yeah. If our audience wants to reach out, if they want to invest with you, if they want to make a deal with you, sell you, buy you, hire you, how can they find you?
They can't hire me because I'm not selling anything. Achieveinvestmentgroup.com is our website. You can come there and register. And usually you'll get there's an invest with us link there where you can get a Calendly link and you can set up some time and talk to me. And if you want to get my book, Passive Investing in Commercial Real Estate,
okay,
you can go to passiveinvestinginrealestate.com and get this book. This book's $20 in Amazon.
Perfect.
And if you go to that website, it's $4.95 for shipping. You have to wait for 3 or 4 weeks for it to come, but that'll be a really good place for you to learn passive. And the other book that I recently launched is called Smarter Doctors. This book was written mainly for doctors because a lot of times they have this big wall around them because they get bombarded with so many financial advice. Everybody want to target them, right? So I said, I'm going to write a book and they're going to pick up and read it because 20% of my investor base are doctors. And every time I talk to them, they say, oh, I should have known this syndication thing a long time ago.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we also have a lot of dentists and physicians in our investors pool. And one of my business partners is a dentist. And you're absolutely right. Not only they're bombarded by other people from outside, but they also don't have a lot of financial education, frowned upon to talk about the business side of medicine. But definitely, I think a book like this would be a huge help for someone like that. So absolutely, we'll put all those links in the show notes. And again, I thank you so much for coming on the show, James.
Absolutely. Nice to giving as much value as to your audience.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And for you, the audience, if you want to see more shows like that with great people like James, we are on YouTube, we are on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you can consume a podcast, you will find us over there. Please subscribe, leave us a review. We appreciate it. And until next time, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to our show. If you want to enjoy more episodes, please subscribe on iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or SoundCloud. For questions or feedback, please visit our site at www.aptopr.com.